today to have Dr. Chris Moore come and have a conversation with us about Charcot-Foot. Dr. Moore is a local podiatrist who works with us and provides lots of care for all of our patients in this area. I'm going to leave it to him to introduce himself further.
Thank you very much for asking me to join today, and I hope to share some pearls that people can take back to their practice to help improve our patients' outcomes. I've been practicing in Asheville since 2004. There's two other doctors in our group. We take care of everything foot and ankle, but we have a sub-focus on patients that have diabetes and complications of diabetes that we see in the foot. And so this is topic of Charcot-Foot is near and dear to our heart and something that we want to try to improve early diagnosis and get better outcomes and reduce cost for our community.
Can you let us know more about what Charcot-Foot is?
Sure. So Charcot was first described a long time ago in the literature. So Jean-Martin Charcot was a French neurologist, and he was studying syphilis, and the late stage syphilis complications result in peripheral neuropathy. So he started seeing patients that would come in with Charcot type fractures related to that neuropathy. So he was the first to write that out back in 1868. So it's been known about for a long time, but it's can be a mimicking disorder. So it shows up as a red hot swollen foot. And we now see it more commonly in patients with diabetes with neuropathy than with late stage syphilis. And so a diabetic patient comes in red hot swollen foot. It's often diagnosed as infection because we're worried about infection. So the patient might be hospitalized, might get IV antibiotics while they're in the hospital resting, the foot elevated. The redness, warmth, and swelling decreases, and it's attributed to the antibiotics, but as soon as they're discharged, it becomes red hot and swollen again because maybe it wasn't an infection to start with. So Charcot is a process that develops in patients that have neuropathy where they can have a minor trauma or injury to their foot, and they're not aware of it. They don't have any pain feedback to let them know that they missed that step, bumped their foot going up into the car, things like that. And they continue walking on that insensate foot, and they have repetitive trauma occurs. When that trauma occurs, the foot starts to swell, which is a normal response to a sprain or an injury. And that swelling then can actually result in AV shunting, and a lot of increased blood flow will start to wash out the calcium and minerals, leading to local osteoporosis in that part of the foot. And if they continue walking on it unprotected, the bones will start to break and come apart. Most often, the deformity affects the bottom of the arch. It will collapse, and they'll develop something called a rocker bottom foot deformity. So the arch will actually reverse its normal place. It's down at the lowest point, and the forefoot and the heel are up. And that abnormal shape now greatly increases the risk for an ulceration. Patients that have Charcot have about a 60 to 70% chance of developing an ulcer because of that deformity. And up to 50% of patients that have Charcot with an ulcer can go on to amputation. And so if we can catch this early, stop the progression of the bone destruction, prevent the deformity, or if they have the deformity, try to protect it with appropriate bracing and offloading, sometimes even surgery to reconstruct the foot, and we can prevent that ulcer, prevents amputation. Another area of a lot of research over the last 20 years is looking at mortality related to amputation. So at 5 years after below the knee amputation, it's about a 30% survival rate. 70% of those patients have died. So we're not just saving the foot, we're actually helping prolong the patient's life as well.
What is your advice for primary care or to catch this early? Or what can we do to help prevent it from getting to the point that it gets that red hot, angry, develop the fractures, and we start that cascade?
So the initial management of the patient with diabetes is trying to get tight glycemic control. So for patients to get neuropathy, it seems to be associated with those higher hemoglobin A1Cs. Patients, by the time they get to see me, will often have an A1C of 12 to 15, and the diabetes is completely out of control. So from a primary care standpoint, make sure the patient's aggressive at keeping those blood sugars controlled. If they do have a patient that presents with a red, hot, swollen foot, be very aggressive as far as the workup, trying to differentiate between infection and Charcot. That would include a baseline x-ray, which often will be normal. It may take 2 to 3 weeks before an x-ray will start to show changes of the Charcot. So other imaging studies to consider would be an MRI. If the patient doesn't have an ulcer, the MRI is really sensitive at picking up the Charcot. If they have an ulcer, then it complicates things because the same findings we would see with Charcot look like osteomyelitis as well. So it's bone marrow edema, increased fluid around the bones and joints. And if there's an ulcer, that's harder to differentiate with just with an MRI. Other studies would be like a bone scan. So you can do the typical three-phase bone scan, or you can do a white blood cell labeled scan. So if you tag white blood cells to the bone scan, that can help differentiate between the two as well. Laboratory values also play some role, but often in these patients with uncontrolled diabetes, they might not be mounting an immune response. So you might do a CBC and their WBCs might be still normal, even though they might have an infection. So that's difficult as well. So really probably early referral is going to be beneficial. If you do an initial workup and the patient's not getting better, don't hesitate to try to get that patient in within 2 to 3 weeks to see a specialist that can help manage it. One of the first treatments we do if we see a patient that has acute Charcot would be, one, immobilize the patient, try to get them, prevent them from walking on the foot, and then managing that edema. So they often have significant swelling. If we can put them in compression bandages, that can help reduce the swelling, cast immobilization. We can get the swelling reduced, that AV shunting reverses, and then the body can start to replace calcium and minerals and repair the soft bones.
While you're doing all of those various treatments for the primary care, they're starting to see the early changes, the slow development of the rocker bottom foot. Is there anything that they can do to kind of slow that progression along with better glycemic control? Is there something else they can do to kind of help educate the patient or help provide more for the patient so they can help be part of this care?
So the Charcot actually has been divided into three different categories of how it affects the foot. So in the acute phase is when you would actually start to see the deformity develop. The patient might have that red hot and swollen appearance. And then as it starts to heal, it starts to go through the reparative phase. And the final is the coalescence phase after the deformity is there. The foot cools off and is deformed. So another thing primary care can do is try to always examine the feet at every visit. So have the patient take their socks and shoes off, make that part of your office protocol. So when your MA or your nurse seats the patient, go ahead and have them remove their socks and shoes. As part of the exam, be screening for neuropathy. This doesn't happen if they have intact sensation. So just the standard neurologic tests you would do at chairside, you light touch, sharp dull, Sims-Weinstein monofilament testing, vibratory sensation. And if all of those are normal, then your index of suspicion for Charcot is much lower. If they do have tests confirming the neuropathy and you see changes, you can send them for an x-ray to start with. If the x-ray is abnormal, then obviously refer them out. If the x-ray is normal, but their signs and symptoms of this red hot swollen foot continue, then try to get them in to see a specialist sooner than later so we can catch it. If I do see a patient that has this problem, there are different types of surgery we'll offer at different phases of the problem. So during the acute phase, if they've already started to develop deformities, so we start to see that arch is coming down, we'll often take a contralateral x-ray of the other foot and compare if there's a change, more pronation on the side that's affected. We might do something as simple as a percutaneous Achilles tendon lengthening or gastrocnemius recession. A lot of what contributes to the rocker bottom foot is actually the Achilles tendon and equinus. Another thing that happens with patients that have diabetes is they get glycosylation or glucose deposition into the tendon itself. The Achilles tendon is the largest tendon in the body, and it can lose elasticity and flexibility. And it's that's part of the deforming force that makes the arch collapse. And if we can lengthen the Achilles tendon, that's a minor procedure, one or two stitches in the back of the lower leg, and that can reduce some of the deforming force. A lot of the patients that would have uncontrolled diabetes and neuropathy aren't necessarily the most compliant patient either. So if we're telling them not to walk on it, but they're continuing to, if we lengthen the Achilles tendon, that can reduce the chance of it going on to a worse deformity as well. And then on the other end, when if we've gotten the Charcot treated, it's calmed down, it's in the coalescence or the final phase, but they still have a deformity. Other things that we may consider in addition to the Achilles tendon would be maybe just an exostectomy or removal of any bone spur or bony prominence. Sometimes we do a full reconstruction where we recreate the arch with either internal fixation or external fixation. And in that middle phase where they're still in the reparative phase, we actually will sometimes operate on those patients as well, initially with an external fixator to try to minimize any retained hardware if we're still concerned about infection, like someone that has a wound, and then follow up with more permanent fixation once the wound is healed and we're not concerned about infection.
So for the earlier phase where it's red hot and angry, and we're still trying to determine whether we are infectious or we're having reaction from the Charcot foot, and that's a kind of a difficult spot. And I know that we tend to err on the side of treating infection, but I guess we need to do concurrent treatment with also the offloading and telling our patients at that time. Do you put them in a post-op shoe, or would you put them in a boot to try to help remind patients to not put weight on it? Because I know that it's a very hard thing for patients to grasp, not putting weight on a foot, especially when they have other social forces that going to work, things like that, that are pulling on their mind that they need to do as well.
The initial treatment would be either a compression bandage with a cam boot. A post-op shoe is probably not going to be sufficient to immobilize this problem. You need something that's blocking the ankle motion as well. Also, along the lines of what you just said, a larger device is going to be more suggestive to the patient that we're serious, that this is a serious problem. Or even a cast. So we might put them in a total contact cast or even just a regular below the knee fiberglass cast with a compression bandage under the cast. And if it's truly Charcot in the acute phase, within 1, 2, or 3 weeks of these compression bandages, we should notice a pretty quick resolution of the edema and the increased skin temperature. But the whole treatment process, if we catch it early, is going to be between 3 to 6 months of casting and or immobilization to get it to calm down enough to allow them to resume normal ambulation on both feet.
During this time, would you suggest like some sort of therapy or some other exercises? Because a lot of these patients also with the uncontrolled diabetes, lifestyle changes are something we all say, but it's hard for these patients to actually follow through. Just what are your other suggestions of how to help them move more, especially when you're telling them not to put weight on a foot?
Yeah, and that is a difficult position that we're put in to try to get the patient to keep all the weight off their foot. So you can have a very compliant patient that doesn't put any weight on the right foot where the Charcot is, and they can actually develop a Charcot on the other foot because of unilateral ambulation. So we do sometimes involve physical therapy, especially if it's a more elderly patient, because this usually shows up in the fourth, fifth, sixth decade of life. So physical therapy can play a role to help make sure when they are non-weight bearing, they're doing it safely, can help select the appropriate device, whether it's crutches, a walker, a rolling knee walker. If they're able to use a rolling knee walker, that's a good choice because they can still be putting weight on both limbs and not overloading the contralateral limb as much. So the physical therapy and helping determine these different assistive devices can be very helpful. Another statement I think that can be helpful to try to as a takeaway from this, is that Charcot foot is a condition that can be difficult to diagnose, as we just talked about. It's not straightforward to diagnose, and it can rapidly deteriorate into damage that is very difficult to reverse. And so that, early imaging, and if you're not getting clear improvement, not getting clear answers with imaging, early referral, would be recommended to try to avoid these late complications of this problem. And then something else I didn't mention is if you do have a patient with an ulcer and Charcot and you're trying to differentiate, a simple bone biopsy is something that can play a huge role to help differentiate, is this Charcot bone or is this osteomyelitis as well? And that also can be done percutaneously. That's something that we do with a bone biopsy trocar. If you're at a facility where you don't have podiatry coverage, sometimes interventional radiology can do that biopsy test for you. So getting a bone biopsy would actually be the gold standard more than imaging to tell you for sure what's going on the inside. And then something else I haven't mentioned too is as far as your differential diagnosis, you also have to think about gout. So include the gout workup as your lab diagnosis. If they have a elevated uric acid, then it may be gout you're dealing with, not Charcot. But gout is one of those diagnoses that sometimes can be more clinical and not definitive with labs. You might miss the window of elevated uric acid by the time you get that test, and it may have gout and you might have missed it. It comes back as normal uric acid. So, but keep that in your differential as well.
This was very informative, and there's just lots of information that you've given us to think through. Any last pearl of wisdom that you want to give us before we close up?
I think that I speak for a lot of people that are part of MHP. We're very fortunate to have this group of many different specialists that are all collaborating. I'm often listening to podcasts of conditions I would never treat, but I can always come away with something that's useful. So I think it's very great for us to have this close-knit medical community that discusses important topics like this. So hopefully with today's discussion, people have a takeaway of looking for this, have a low index of suspicion to order advanced imaging studies. And then if you're still concerned about that patient, early referral can help reduce cost, reduce the chance of an ulceration, reduce the chance of an amputation, and then hopefully prolong the patient's life. So thank you for allowing me to be a part of this program.
Thank you.